Well, my training is in aerospace engineering at Purdue University and also at UCLA. So being an engineer and working in this kind of area reminds me of a story about an engineer who was with his son, his small son, 10-year-old son, at this park. They were laid out on the grass by this beautiful lake. It was a very peaceful, serene setting, and they had empty hamburger wrappers on the grass beside them, and they were just staring up at the beautiful view, and the sun and the sky was beating down on a warm late afternoon, and the little boy says, "Dad, why are we here?" And the dad says, "You know, son, that's a very important question. Human beings are the ones who need to contemplate these things. If nobody else thinks about these things, who's going to think about them? We're not here just to work day in and day out, 9 to 5, and go home to our houses and enjoy a beautiful life. We're here to look at the beautiful creation, enjoy God's realm. And we're here to do all these things." And the son breaks in and says, "But Dad..." And the dad says, "No, son, there's more. We're here not just to enjoy the beauty, but we're here to enjoy God's training, our education from this world, through the pain and the suffering that we see. Evil is not without purpose. We are strengthened by the adversity that we face." And the son says, but dad. And finally the dad says, "What, son?" And the son says, "No, I mean, why are we here when we were supposed to pick up Mom 45 minutes ago?" Needless to say, the peaceful setting was broken by a flurry of empty hamburger wrappers. And so I'm wondering sometimes when I'm working in this area where there's philosophical implications, we're thinking about things that aren't as clear-cut as they are in aerospace engineering. I'm wondering sometimes if somebody's going to say, "Will you just get back to work?" But no, I think these are important areas, and I'm privileged to be able to work with some honor students at Oral Roberts University. And this has turned out to be a really neat team to think about these issues. A couple of engineering students along with a psychology major and a theology major. And the team have been thinking about these areas, about the possibility of using affordance-based reverse engineering, a new concept in reverse engineering, to look at complex natural systems and try to do some design recovery, to try to discover the original intent, possibly, or even just functionality and purpose. So I'm grateful to the honors program at Oral Roberts University that's helped fund this research to allow us to do this honors fellowship with these students. And we'll look very briefly at an artificial system, a man-made system. Anybody heard of the Antikythera mechanism? It was found in a shipwreck about 100 years ago. Off Greece. And then we'll think about the possibility of applying reverse engineering techniques to natural systems. You know, one of the first people to do intricate reverse engineering studies of natural systems was Leonardo da Vinci. And this is a page out of his notebook that he drew. And he came to an interesting conclusion. He said, "The human foot is a masterpiece of engineering and a work of art." He recognized the beautiful functionality within nature, and that very much impressed him. And down throughout the ages, people have recognized that. And more recently, we see Stephen Hawking saying things like, in search of a theory of everything, "Our goal is a complete understanding of the events around us and of our own existence." Now, this is interesting. A scientist making these kinds of statements, similar to the way Einstein said, "I want to know what he was thinking. I want to know the mind of God." Is this possible? Well, is it possible that we could apply reverse engineering techniques to get a better idea through natural systems of what was in the mind of the Creator? Well, you all are familiar with reverse engineering. When you were a kid, did you ever take anything apart to see how it worked? I remember when our kids were little, even something as simple as throwing some pots and pans on the kitchen floor and giving them a metal spoon, and they figure out, wow, I can bang on these pots and pans and make noise. Maybe they had some sense that they were able to control their environment. Maybe the first time they were ever really able to feel like they could control their environment. Or maybe they just liked the banging sound. Whatever, if they didn't grow out of that stage, they'd become drummers or percussionists. But after they get a little older, maybe they think about taking things apart. Have you ever had kids take apart your radio or something and try to put it back together to see how it worked? Or they get to, they probably do that with natural systems too. You know, some kids like to pull the legs off of spiders and see if they can still walk around. I'm not advocating that, but those who don't grow out of that stage tend to become scientists or engineers. And we recognize in our engineering programs, as in this recent article in the Prism magazine, that this is a good way to teach design, is to let students take apart devices and see how they were put together, what the interactions were between the component parts, and what does that say about the original designers? What does it say about their expertise? What does it say about their intentions? What affordances are provided both to the end user and also between parts, what things are provided in order to provide something to the end user. Well, look at this classic example. Anybody know where Antikythera is, the island of Antikythera? Any geographers in here? Way down here, just south of Kythera. And that is where around 1900, some sponge divers were just diving off the coast, and one of them came up and said, "I see dead people, I see dead people." I said, "What are you talking about? There are many dead people." And the head of the expedition went down and found all of these statues, ancient statues, horses and riders, in the shipwreck under about 80 meters under the surface. And so there was a very wonderful find, archaeological find. They took many of these items to the museum in Athens. And one of the things they found was just this kind of coral-encrusted block of, they didn't know what it was, but they put it in the museum. And a few months later, it dried out and cracked open. And somebody was walking by, saw that, my goodness, there's a very intricate kind of gear train exposed here, a portion of a gear train. And they had dated this find already to around 100 B.C. And they thought, somebody was smart enough to know this was unusual to find this intricate gear train from this time period. This is all recorded in this book, Decoding the Heavens by Joe Marchant, which just came out this year. Very interesting book. We've been reverse engineering this item for the last 100 years to try to figure out what in the world this was. It turns out it was a planetarium of sorts. It had about 27 interlocking gears, including epicyclical gears, planetary gear system, to predict celestial bodies, planets, their positions in orbit. It even predicted eclipses. A very fascinating discovery. It was thought to be the first analog computer. As you turn the crank, all of these wheels would go around and predict the motions of the heavens. And as I was going through this book, I'm looking for books that detail reverse engineering, and I discovered a few interesting things from this book about reverse engineering. These are the pieces that were recovered, and here's a schematic, and there's been some models built of this. Very interesting. You can find out information about the maker of a device by studying the device. Joe Marchant says in one point in the book that these letters that were engraved on the outside casing of this device, some of the letters were still visible. She said the letters were so precise, they must have been engraved not by a laborer, but by a highly trained craftsman. Other things you can discover through reverse engineering have to do with origin and destination of a device. Scrutinizing the details of the gear wheels and inscriptions, however, wasn't the only way to investigate the mechanism. You don't just do dissection of the specimen in a vacuum without regard to anything else. Archaeologists also studied the rest of the salvaged cargo and the surrounding cultures and the history of their time. They used all this information, and these discoveries helped to paint a vivid picture of when the ship sailed, where her load was being taken, and the sort of world from which she came. From there, we can guess at the origins of the Antikythera mechanism itself and how it ended up on its final journey. So, I'm wondering if some of these ideas can be translated into the world of natural systems, if these approaches can apply to natural systems and what that might tell us. Well, this is not necessarily my idea. The National Academy of Engineering, in one of their grand challenges for the next century, has said, we want to reverse engineer the human brain. With images like this, a nanoscale resolution MRI, we're making some progress in this area, but it's very, very complex. So how do we handle this complexity? E.O. Wilson, who's not a believer to my knowledge, has said things like this: the surest way to grasp complexity in the brain, as in any other biological system, is to think of it as an engineering problem. Researchers in biomechanics have discovered time and again that organic structures evolved by natural selection conform to high levels of efficiency when judged by engineering criteria. And he's not alone in this view either. Daniel Dennett says the same thing. He says we must do reverse engineering for biological systems. And if we're doing reverse engineering, that means we have to ask the why questions. Now, these are not necessarily the kinds of things that scientists have been saying, but they recognize now that teleology is very important in discovering things about natural systems, biological systems. The joint issue on automatic controls and circuits and systems for the IEEE in January of last year was a special issue on systems biology, which they defined as the quantitative analysis of networks of dynamically interacting biological components with the goal of reverse engineering these networks to understand how they robustly achieve biological function. Other researchers are talking about how, not just about how reverse engineering works so well, but they're talking about how we see fabulous engineering as a result of these natural processes. Now, engineering cannot be divorced from purpose. It doesn't. To me, the term purposeless engineering doesn't make any sense at all. If you're going to have engineering, there has to be purpose. Otherwise, it's not engineering, in my mind. So the implications of this, to me, are obvious. Robert Eisenberg has recently written an article entitled "Look at Biological System Through an Engineer's Eyes." He claims that it's clear to him, a physiologist, that productive research is catalyzed by assuming that most biological systems are devices. Thinking today of your biological preparation as a device tells you what experiments to conduct tomorrow. Well, we've done some research on how you do reverse engineering and how you might apply reverse engineering to natural systems. And one of the best papers we found was in the IEEE Transactions on Systems, Man, and Cybernetics by Rieckhoff, entitled On Reverse Engineering. He defines reverse engineering as the act of creating a set of specifications for a piece of hardware by someone other than the original designers, primarily based on analyzing and dimensioning a specimen or collection of specimens. But I'm glad he added that primarily there, because it is not just by looking at the specimen, but by also looking at any other pertinent data that bears on this specimen. It's very similar to detective work, he says, or crime scene investigation, or military intelligence operations. And I'm reminded of the story of the Tu-4 bomber. Anybody know that the Russians actually developed their Tu-4 bomber in the late 40s based on a couple of American bombers that had to put down during the end of World War II in the backside of Russia? And the Americans were very surprised at the Paris Air Show in 1947 to see this, what looked like an American bomber fly in, but it was a Russian Tu-4. And they found out that they had taken the American bombers apart piece by piece, reverse engineered every single component of the 100,000 pieces or whatever of the bombers, and had done such a great job that...
This goes on in the automotive industry, too.
Yeah.
I worked at GM Research Lab for 23 years. Right across the road from us was a facility where they bought everybody else's vehicle and gave them out to GM engineers to drive for a while, and then
they took them apart completely. This is a very mature technology, and I'm wondering if it's not a good idea to try to apply this mature technology to natural systems in a way that makes sense. The Russians did such a good job of reverse engineering the American bombers that their engines caught fire just like the American version. Can we do this with natural systems like DNA. It seems like a natural extension. Well, Rieckhoff talks about a step-by-step procedure for reverse engineering these types of systems, but I think I'm going to just let you see the paper. There's a few copies of the paper up here if you're really interested in this topic, and you can go into the further detail. This is really the meat and potatoes of the talk, but I think I better move on. It's basically system engineering and disassembly and forming hypotheses and testing those hypotheses as you do more and more disassembly and dissection. As an example, an engineer and a biologist got together at Stanford and were singing the praises of this work that was done on the E. coli heat shock mechanism. They developed a mathematical model. The title of the paper was Understanding Biology by Reverse Engineering the Control. And they developed a mathematical model of the different components involved in the heat shock mechanism and looked at the feed-forward pathways and the feedback pathways involved. And then they started to what's called subtract and operate in reverse engineering, where you subtract something from the system and then you operate and see what if it still works and what the changes are that are made. And through this, they made some very interesting conclusions about how robustness and efficiency are afforded to this system by the particular information pathways that existed. And one of the interesting things they said was it was exactly what a well-trained control engineer would design. As I mentioned, this is an example of a subtract and operate technique for reverse engineering. It's talked about in one of the few books that goes into detail in actual techniques for reverse engineering. This is a book by Otto and Wood called Product Design. Now, design recovery is a subset of reverse engineering in which domain knowledge, external information, and deduction or fuzzy reasoning are added to the observations of the subject system to identify meaningful higher-level abstractions beyond those obtained directly by examining the system itself. Simply, what the system was engineered to do and why. Here's where it gets a little interesting when you're talking about natural systems, because this necessarily brings worldview into the picture. There is no separating it. What was the original designer thinking? Design recovery must produce all the information required for a person to fully understand what the system does, how it does it, why it does it, and so forth. What was the original engineer thinking? Famous researcher Gary Larson suggests that maybe this is one example. Boy, these things are a cinch. Of course, things are easy for God, right? Even things as complex as snakes. On the other hand, Gary Larson has another research paper that looks like this. God, as a kid, tries to make a chicken in the lab. Now, I actually just pick this for a little humor, but this has a serious side to it. Because what's the issue that skeptics raise the most? The problem of evil, pain, and suffering in the world? And I was thinking about this last night as I was going through this, and I thought, is this not something akin to maybe how God was feeling in the days of Noah? Was he sorry? I mean, the scripture talks about he was sorry that he made man because of the things that mankind was doing. I don't know. It's a very real issue that we have to wrestle with when we're doing reverse engineering of natural systems. The problem is handling the complexity. The complexities of systems thinking and user interactions require engineers to move beyond simply reversing for product function. Now, here's where I'm going to start talking about affordances, because Jonathan Meyer proposes in this article in Mechanical Engineering magazine last year that the concept of affordance, that is, what a system provides to an end user, or if it's a complex system, what one part of a system provides to another part of the system in order to provide something to an end user, is an underlying and unifying principle in the science of design and also reverse engineering. You might have seen Donald Norman's book, The Design of Everyday Things. He says in this book that affordances provide strong clues to the operations of things. Meyer and Fadell show this triad for the big picture of design. Designer, artifact, and user. And there's very interesting interactions among all three of those entities when you're thinking about doing a design. These and affordance, as he claims, captures important interactions between that triad. Now, when you're doing reverse engineering, you need to add a fourth entity. Think about the Antikythera mechanism. The Antikythera mechanism was an artifact. It had a designer back around 100 BC. It had users back at that time period, and that designer had these users in mind. There were certain interesting interactions there. But now, along comes 1,000 years later, and we have investigators. And that investigator also has important interactions with the other three in the group. This is a very interesting big picture of reverse engineering. So we're claiming that we need to add this fourth entity in terms of the big picture of what's going on when you do reverse engineering of natural systems as well. Affordances can have polarity. They can be positive or negative. Vacuum cleaners afford sucking dirt from the rug, which is good to be thought to be good, but they also make a lot of noise sometimes, which is a negative affordance, right? And they can have quality. How well do they provide a certain use? And there's something interesting about this aspect of positive and negative affordances that I think applies to philosophy. A chair affords sitting. This chair, you might think, is preferred because it also affords mobility if you want to move your chair somewhere else. But suppose you don't have all the information. Suppose this chair is actually looking out over a beach and there's a huge hurricane bearing down on this chair and you'd like to sit in it and take these vines and strap yourself in so you don't get blown off the island. In that case, given the additional information, what appeared to be a negative affordance actually turned out to be a positive. And this is inherent in reverse engineering, that we do not have all the information. It's inherent in the human condition. We do not have all the information. So we need to be careful about originally claiming that things like pain and suffering are negative affordances. They might, in the end, turn out to be positive affordances, given more information about the system, right? Of course, if you have a chair like this, then all your problems are solved. So we have developed a diagram here to kind of outline this procedure for reverse engineering. Meyer claims that if you put together an affordance structure matrix, which breaks down a system into its component parts and then lists the affordances, both artifact user affordances and artifact to artifact affordances, and then fill in the matrix to see what components what affordances are provided associated with what components, then you've done a pretty good job of reverse engineering a system. And lately, his latest version of this actually puts in either pluses or minuses for positive or negative, or also some percentage out of 100 in order to indicate how well an affordance is provided. So he's getting more and more detailed with this, but we're just getting started in exploring this approach. And we're thinking we can make some modifications to it to help us understand natural systems better. Once you, he claims that once you develop this affordance structure matrix, that you have basically reverse engineered the system and the mechanism of operation is well understood. Well, I was just reading Swinburne, who's an Oxford philosopher of religion, his recent book on the existence of God. And there's some very interesting affordance provided by the mind-body system, as an example. Sense organs with a great capacity to receive information is what we find within the human being. Information processing that turns sense organ states into brain states that give rise to beliefs. We have a memory bank to file states correlated with past experiences. This gives rise to desires, both good and evil desires. Brain states caused by various purposes that we have, and a processor in order to produce body movements to realize these purposes. And he claims that we have brain states that are not fully determined by physical states, so that we have the possibility for free choice. This is a very interesting state of affairs for a device like human beings. And we are not only allowed then to affect our world and affect others, but we turn out to have this effect on our own characters as we make these kinds of decisions and purposes and execute these purposes. For good or for ill, we play a role in shaping our own characters, who we become. This is a very interesting set of affordances for a creature. This is significant, he claims, that we have these affordances, and it points to certain meanings and purposes. And I was very interested to see this other psychology professor in the UK with an article entitled "Affordances Are Signs." And he claims that we need to look at these signs and read the signs and what they tell us. There can be very significant influence on the investigator in these kinds of studies. Who said this? You probably all would know this. "I cannot see as plainly as others do, and as I should wish to do, evidence of design and beneficence on all sides of us. There seems to be too much misery in the world." No. "On the other hand, I cannot anyhow be contented to view this wonderful universe, and especially the nature of man, and to conclude that everything is the result of brute force. I'm inclined to look at everything as resulting from designed laws, with the details, whether good or bad, left out to the workings of what we may call chance. Not that this notion at all satisfies me. I feel most deeply that the whole subject is too profound for the human mind. A dog might as well speculate on the mind of Newton. Let each man hope and believe what he can." Yeah. It was Charles Darwin. Well, there was another researcher, and I've chosen this person specifically because he's not a scientist or an engineer, and I believe that this can be applied to lots of all fields, because we all conduct this kind of reverse engineering throughout all of our lives, whether we're scientists or not. The chief purpose of life for any one of us is to increase, according to our capacity, our knowledge of God by all the means we have, and to be moved by it to praise and thanks. J.R.R. Tolkien. See, one good way to get to know a distant artist, inventor, or engineer is to study his or her great works. And so, second to the last slide here, natural systems are extremely well engineered for life. In addition, natural systems are readily and profitably reverse engineered by human beings, suggesting the hypothesis that such systems were engineered in the first place. Integrated affordances throughout the realm of nature point to an engineering influence, or a calculating, and I would say caring, intentionality. Leonardo da Vinci also said, "I have offended God and mankind because my work didn't reach the quality it should have." I sort of feel the same way about this work, but we're going to keep going on it, and hopefully we can do some good work. Thank you for your kind attention.
We have time for a few questions. Is there any questions?
Yes.
It is curious, the design language that we use in natural systems, and say the pattern design.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, if nature has done so well, it would, by chance, natural selection and just mutations. What would happen if an intelligent design was behind this whole thing? I mean, it's ridiculous.
I think you have a great point. I think it's very significant, no matter how these systems came to be, it's very significant that we have fabulous engineering. And I'm very interested in how these systems did come to be, but regardless of how they came to be the way they are, that is significant. It's something we ignore to a large degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two more questions.
How can naturalists adopt the concept of reverse engineering for something that they readily admit is a completely random thing?
This is, how can naturalists adopt this approach? Right. I'm hoping that we're going to start realizing this, because I don't understand how they can, like I said before, to suggest that it was purposeless engineering makes no sense. It's an oxymoron. Use some other word besides engineering if you want.
Well, I like where this discussion is going, and I think design has become such a charged word now. And
yeah.
Maybe if we switch over to the appearance of purpose,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe that frees us up from some of the baggage that comes along with the
house. We submitted a paper for the Design and Nature conference, and that's not a religious conference, and the students and I were working on it, and we tried not to use the word design, so we used engineering instead, and we got accepted. Now they've told us that they are going to publish it in the Journal of Design and Nature too, so we're excited about that. And it might be because we didn't talk about design so much, we talked about engineering and reverse engineering.
Well, thank you very much, sir.